The following program isn't suitable for younger listeners.
You have so much fear, and it's not the first time I've been asked the question of why didn't you just leave or why didn't you just tell somebody. It's because you're scared. You're frightened. There's this man, and you're still a little girl, you know, so you can't really do much to defend yourself.
Those are recollections from a young woman about being trafficked for sexual purposes. And the trap, the sophisticated trap that was set for her and from which she could not escape. You'll hear her dramatic story and more on today's Focus on the Family with Jim Daly.
John, this is such a hard and difficult topic. I mean, this isn't what we talk about normally at Focus on the Family. We're talking about marriage and parenting and how to strengthen your family. But more and more children are being exploited. Last time, if you didn't hear the broadcast, download it. Get a copy, download the app for your iPhone. I think it was very informative, especially for parents to understand the signs. But we're talking about an industry where 100,000, roughly 100,000 children in the U.S. are captured in this way and used barbarically for sexual pleasure. And it's anywhere from $5 to $9 billion that is generated out of this industry. Mm-hmm. And it's a worldwide problem. And man, if you don't know evil, this is evil. And for us in the Christian community, if we can't stand up against this, we better check ourselves and make sure we're reading scripture. So I am really animated about this because it should not stand in our nation that little girls and boys are exploited in this way. And we're going to talk further today with two very special guests.
Yeah, that's right, Jim. And by the way, the word evil came to mind several times on the last program as we talked about what happened. You heard from Lacey, and you'll hear more from her today. And she's going by a pseudonym. She was a victim in that terrible crime pattern, and she'll have more for you. Also, Linda Smith is here, and Linda has devoted almost two decades now of her life to rescuing women and children from sexual slavery. And she is a tireless advocate for justice for these victims. She founded the organization Shared Hope International, and she was also a congresswoman in the state of Washington, serving there in the House of Representatives from 1995 to 1999.
Linda, welcome back.
Always good to be with you.
Lacey, it is such an honor to have you with us as well.
It's great to be here.
We talked last time. You're now 19 years old. This did not happen that long ago for you. You were 12, 13 when you were taken in this way. We described some of that in detail last time. Let's talk about how you began to see and others around you see that you needed help. How did your rescue occur?
Well, my rescue occurred because Linda, she trained my probation officer when I was arrested. My probation officer, I guess, what would you say, flagged my caseload and kind of brought it to Linda's attention. And they screened me while I was in juvenile detention. And I met one of the Shared Hope advocates there. She was a detention officer, and a lot of people came up and would interview me with their different backgrounds or wherever they were in the system, and only one of them really stood out, and she was trained by Shared Hope International, and she really knew how to not intrude with questions and just kind of, you know, well, Shared Hope's here for you kind of thing, and not push it on me, because as soon as you push on these girls, they're going to run.
So you felt some comfort with this individual.
Yeah, I felt.
Did you begin to open up to her then? Is that what happened?
Yeah, she had, I think what really got to me was she had brought me a Snickers bar in the interview room.
Just some kindness.
Yeah, the rest of them just kind of, you know, your name, this, that, and the other, kind of very formal about it. And this person was very nice and not intrusive, you know, and respected that I didn't want to speak to anyone, but, you know.
Are you 14 at this point?
Yes, I was turning 15, I believe. Yeah, 15.
So, you know, 2 years you've been trafficked.
Yes.
And did you feel yourself becoming hardened in that environment? I mean, just being abused in that way. What were your emotions like as a 15-year-old, almost 15-year-old, experiencing everything that you've experienced that we have not really talked in any detail about, that you don't need to, but just those emotions? What were you feeling as a 15-year-old girl?
Well, just before I was even trafficked, I was a really nice person. I was probably one of the nicest people you could meet. and then after that time frame, you know, I just became a different person, you know, just slowly transitioning. And during that time while you're trafficked, you just really, you start forgetting your self-worth and things like that. So that reflects on how you are. It's just you don't care about yourself. You don't care about other people. You're very angry and you're very aggressive. And you don't look at people like people anymore. You look at them like monsters. You know, there's been times when I was arrested and one of the purchasers or clients was, you know, just you can go by the police, and then you start looking at the people that are supposed to be helping you, like the police and our justice system, as enemies. You start seeing them, and that's what your traffickers are telling you in the first place, is they're not going to help you. They're not going to care for you. And then they reflect that by letting the buyers go and taking you.
I want to dig in on that, because I think that's a point that really is upsetting, that even within, and I'm sure there are good officers and there are good judges and all of that, but I want to talk about those that are jaded themselves. They see this, as you said last time, Linda, as almost a victimless crime. It's just sex. Describe that kind of attitude and how they're jaded in the system that, okay, it happens, just move on your way. Yet it is brutalizing these children. Talk about that.
Well, I think that in 5 years that I've really worked, seven, I guess, on these cases a lot in the United States, I've watched law enforcement change dramatically. They're just somebody's dad, mom, cousin, brother, and they're starting to understand. And as they are, they're starting to change in how they work with girls like Lacey. She has police in her life now that she loves. They're just great. And a particularly one who has gone cross country to see her and visits her anytime he's in the area. And he was involved in her rescue. So there's really good law enforcement. I think they reflect society. If I thought some girls were just like that and some people just do that and it would never affect me 10 years ago, why would I think anybody had any difference? I think the system is changing, but there's still a certain number of law enforcement, judges, prosecutors that do not see this as a serious crime. And so we have a long ways to go. We've, you know, we've got the laws changed in lots of states. Many of you have been involved in that in the Focus on the Family. And you here in your corporate offices, like you, Jim, you've been involved in changing the laws. But if the heart doesn't change, then the law will not be applied, because they only prosecute cases that they really think people care about. I don't know if people realize it, but not every crime is prosecuted. It's pled down to a lesser crime. Right now, what they're doing is, in many cases, these policemen, like the ones that have played so heavily in Lacey's life and been a part of her rescue and protection, they will bring these cases to the judges. They'll bring them to the prosecutor. They never get to the judge. And they'll play them down to a misdemeanor or some other crime. And like Michael Gilliland, who is a big businessman here in Colorado, he was buying in Phoenix. And they ended up pleading it down to where he served 30 days in jail total, 15 days, and then got a break to run his business and 15 more. And he is here in Colorado and in Arizona. And I would say today, who knows what he's doing, but if he had been arrested and prosecuted federally, he'd be in prison 15 years. Now, that's still going on. And so there's a reason for girls like Lacey to be irritated. She spent more time in jail than Michael Gilliland.
Now, I want to add that context that we covered last time, where the perpetrators in Lacey's case were threatening her with killing or abusing her 10-year-old sister or her mother. So when you look at that, that was going on emotionally for Lacey. So when you, as the average citizen, are thinking about these things, you don't necessarily know the whole emotional story going on with that young lady or that young man that is being victimized. That's the word we need to use.
Right.
They're being traumatized. They're being blackmailed.
They're a kid.
They're a child.
You know, one thing that, I mean, I've had aha moments over this last 16, 17 years since God has put me in this ministry. And those aha moments are things I've known, but I didn't think about it. And that is the brain development of a child is not done. We're not done until 23, 25. And at 12, 13, parts of the brain that would deal with cause and effect, the front part of the brain of risk and danger, there's a lot of things aren't developed. They don't see it. So when you say to your kids something like, well, don't you see what's happening? No, they don't. Their brain isn't developed. And so these kids' brains aren't developed. They don't see danger. They're easily manipulated.
Trusting.
You sit down with a female, and this is, you know, psychologists will put more around this. You let her talk for 30 minutes. If you're a male, she thinks you love her.
Right. That's the bonding gene.
It is. And she responds different to response to males. She will fall in love with you if you listen. So what do these guys do? They hang out at Starbucks and they listen to people like Lacey. So just remember, there's still some child, and they maybe made a choice to skip school like Lacey did, but this shouldn't be a choice to slavery and torture and a society disregarding her. No, we need to go after that predator, that man that is shopping for these kids, because there'll always be bad people like the trafficker.
Well, let me put it this way. I've thought a lot about this, how to say this. So let's see if I could get it right. You know, one of the key things here is that within the church itself, we've got to face up to it. I remember Pastor Raul Reese did a men's retreat with about 1,500 men. And he started that men's retreat by saying, hey, you guys, and this guy, Raul Reese, is an ex-Marine, which I know most would say you're never an ex-Marine. And he pastors that way. And he looked at these men and said, I know many of you are involved in pornography. You got to get up to the front of this platform right now as a Christian man and confess that and repent of it and turn your life around. And I think one of the reasons we're not too concerned about it is because men are being men in the church. Mm-hmm. A lot of men, if I could say it this way and boldly, are tied up into pornography themselves. Our culture is saturated with it. And that's why people don't react to the victimization of these children because, boy, I'm guilty in some way. That's what they'll say. Mm-hmm. We have got to do a better job in the church of acting like Christians.
Visualization to actualization sounds very simple, but so many guys are watching pornography, and it's now younger and younger for the stimulation and more violent and perverted. And therefore, they are going out there when they go actual, not every man does, when he does, and he's out there looking, he's looking for that. Now, he's looking for younger because only younger or vulnerable will do the things that he's seen in pornography. Now, that's hard to hear on a Christian radio station, but it's true. And so what is happening in the real world of child sex trafficking is that there are two ways that the traffickers make money. They will take pictures from the first act. They sell it to guys who get kicks on the taking of innocence. Then they will sell pornography and the pictures they take, whether the child knows they're being taken or not. And that's a whole market on its own. So when you're watching pornography, you're participating in child sex trafficking. Mm-hmm. You're participating in, whether she smiles or not, that child is thinking of her 10-year-old sister in her head. You're taking away that child's life. Don't think pornography for one click or one view is innocent, because you're hearing a girl today that lost all of her junior high and high school time. Mm-hmm. Now, I will tell you today, she is the most amazing person doing amazing things. And we're having great fun doing some fun things together. But they stole from her what they didn't have a right to steal from her.
Lacey, I mean, we're energized about this. You saw it. Am I describing it right? The people that you encountered, the men that you encountered? They were just kind of what would appear to be the normal average person, I'm assuming.
Yeah, a lot of them, you know, they dressed there. It wasn't like, you know, what you would think from a movie, and they have like this trench coat and they're hiding in a shadow, you know, barely lit. No, it's just average people, average men, you know, they go to work, you know, they run a trip to a grocery store and they rent me for about 30 minutes and then they go back and bring the milk that you asked for. And it just, it angers me, and it's gross because they don't see what they're doing is wrong. Mm. And if they do see it, they don't care. And they're just taking away kids' lives just to bring themselves momentary happiness or whatever they get from it.
Lacey, I need to ask you, because you are, as Linda described, and as you described before you were taken in this way, a kind and loving person. How did God maintain that suppleness in your own spirit, your own heart? How did you get through this, being hurt and wounded and men doing things to you in the way that they did? How did you trust that God is still there for you?
Well, actually, to be honest, I didn't trust that. You know, after those times, you know, God would try to reveal himself to me, but I'd tell him to go away. I didn't want anything to do with God, because how did you let me, a good kid, you know, I read books to my brothers and sisters and take them out on little play dates and just different things like that. And I went and I volunteered in my community. I went to youth group and youth retreats, you know, I did my Ten Commandments. How do you let something like that happen to me? And there was something that I didn't understand during that time that God had to later reveal to me when I was ready, because I thought that he was quiet. He was, not that he was quiet, but he was gone. He left me because of the things that I did.
You felt deserted.
Yeah, so I blamed myself for everything. Like, I put myself into the position. I made it seem that I did it. And I realized, you know, thinking back on it, is I was blaming myself for what my trafficker brainwashed me to believe. So I suffered through a lot of anger, depression, a lot of guilt, and just, I was angry. I hated everyone. And I want to, hate is a very strong word, but at the time, that's exactly how I felt, is I hated you. I didn't know you, but I hated you. I think Linda was the only person who got a good side of me every time I saw her, but I did not like anyone. You could be the nicest person, but if you came up to me, especially if you were a man, I did not like you.
Yeah.
I didn't want anything to do with you. I didn't want you around me. And there's been plenty of times where when I was at the home they placed me at, that a new staff member wasn't aware of my predisposition towards men and would approach me thinking I was just like all the other kids, and I would flip out and I would have issues, and they would have to, you know, bring the staff members that I knew and trusted down to calm me down, because I didn't like men within a foot of me. I didn't like them within an arm's reach of me. I didn't like them in the same hallway as me. I didn't like them around at all. And my anger started reflecting towards especially teachers and guidance counselors at the school, and especially police, because I was angry. I should have been helped, but instead I was a criminal. I was angry because in order for me to be protected, I had to be taken and shipped across the country, and I can't see my family. I can't do any of this. You know, I was angry, and I didn't get to go to a real school, you know, and I didn't get to have a prom or any of the stuff that normal kids do. I didn't get any of that because of what happened to me. So there was so much anger and bitterness inside. And there was just this one point in time, you know, my pastor, my youth pastor back then, he was a man, so I always just disliked him. Even though he was a pastor, I didn't care. He never gave up on trying to reach me. And then one day he says, "Hey, do you want to go to a baby shower?" Huh. I didn't like kids back then. I liked my brothers and sisters, and that was it, especially babies. And I don't know why, but I said, okay. It may have been that he offered Starbucks before, but, you know, I went. And at that time, you know, it was the school I went to, they had a program for teenage mothers. And there was all these Christian women who came to this baby shower. And I'm in my head, I'm thinking, you know, well, they shouldn't be rewarding her because they're Christian. And Christians, they don't help you. That's what I was thinking in my head. I grew up in a Christian church, but no one helped me. So in my head, they shouldn't be helping this girl who had sex, you know, before marriage and got pregnant. They shouldn't be showering her with gifts and love. And there was just something in these women that when they smiled at me, I didn't smile back. I was just watching them. I stood in the back of the whole baby shower and I watched them, brand new, you know, expensive things. And they weren't just buying things for the baby. They were buying things for the mother as well. And I just watched and they had this happiness inside them. And I got angry for a second. And I thought to myself, I said, see, God, that's what you stole from me. Mm-hmm. And then I just kept watching the whole baby shower. It was probably about 2 hours or however a baby shower lasts. But I was just watching in the background. I didn't sit down. I didn't have anything to eat. I stood in the corner and I watched these women, these Christian women, and I watched how they had this happiness, and I watched that every time they walked past, there was something that I wanted, and there was something that drew me towards them, where I wanted to stand next to them. And finally, there was just this feeling like I was so heavy, I couldn't stand. It felt like someone was sitting on my chest, and I couldn't breathe. And I pulled my pastor to the side. I grabbed him by the arm, and I didn't touch men back then. I didn't have them near me at all. And I said to my pastor, I said, whatever those women have, I want it now. And as soon as I accepted Jesus, it was like that feeling, that overwhelming sense of depression and everything. It was lifted off, and I could breathe again. And actually, later, a few weeks later, is when I decided that, you know, my trafficker took everything, and I'm not going to let him take my name. That's one thing he can't have, and he can't take my happiness, and he can't take everything that he tried to. And just after that, there was this connection between me and God that can never go away. It's like when you're married and you go through so much together, and there's that bond, that strength that can't be moved. That's how it is with me and God. And I realize now that actually, I don't know, I was listening to a Christian radio show, and I'm not sure if it was you guys, but
probably was, if it's good.
Yeah, it was really good. I listened to it every morning. And he said, the guy that was talking, he told everyone, he said, there's, when we're going through trials and we feel like God's left us, that's not true, because when you're in school and you're taking a test, the teacher is always quiet. Mm-hmm. So at that time, God never left me. He was just quiet. And when he did try to speak, I ignored him, because I didn't want anything to do with him because of those moments when he was quiet. And it's not bad for God to be quiet, because he's still with us. And that's one thing I learned, you know, in my journey.
Lacey, you just gave us a Sunday school lesson there, and that was awesome.
She did. Wow.
Do you you really feel the love of God today? And those broken fences in your heart are mended.
Yes. I actually, I used to lead worship before I had my son, a little bit after, but it's a lot of work. You know, I used to lead worship for my church. I went to Life Church in Manassas, and I used to lead worship there.
And what's beautiful,
their youth group,
is how God has restored the rest of your life, that you're married now, you have a child. Things are, I guess, whatever this means, back to normal, even though you have to carry much of that baggage the rest of your life. But it's what motivates you, I'm sure, to work for Shared Hope International, to express the story. God's given you a testimony now to touch the lives of other young women, young men who are victimized in this way. And I'm teared up just thinking of your courage and, you know, wow. What a way to spend a childhood. I'm so sorry for you.
Oh, it's all right. There's one thing. I don't know who I was talking. It might have been you, but it was one of the Shared Hope people. And they sat there, and I don't even know what the question was. But I told them, if I could go back and have the choice not to go through what I went through, or go through what I went through and have the chance to speak out against it and have the chance to save hundreds of girls, thousands of girls that went through what I went through, but because I didn't go through it, I didn't know. Because I didn't go through it, I wasn't able to become that voice. But because I went through it, now I have this need to speak out against it, this need to teach, and this need to reflect the Bible verse that God showed to me a lot was, "Behold, I'm making all things new." Uh-huh. I have this need to help these girls make their life new. And if that means just sharing my story every now and then, making the Chosen video and having that, that's what touches my heart. And if I could do it full time and not have to worry about working, that's what I would do.
Well, Lacey, thank you. You are so brave, and I so appreciate your transparency in helping us better understand what you encountered. Thank you for that courage to share your story with us.
It's a pleasure.
If you've been angered, and I hope it has happened, that's how I felt when I listened. If you've been angered by what's happening to children every single day, I want to turn to you and ask you to educate yourself. Knowledge is power. We said that last time. And we have some resources for you at our website. That's the list of the signs for trafficking, a link to check out your state's report card. That's where I got motivated. Mm-hmm. I didn't like us having a D grade. That just did not sit well with me. And we were able to do something here in Colorado, and you can do it too. I also want to say how today's program really highlights our desire, and I think your desire too, here at Focus on the Family, to be a voice that advocates for children. Children don't have many lobbyists running around talking about what they need. And we need to do that. If you believe in what we're doing to stand in the gap for kids, will you consider supporting us as we kick off the new year? Your financial support enables us to do the very things that we've been talking about, to produce broadcasts like this, to provide the materials, to disseminate the information that literally could save one life and maybe many, many more. So please, if you can support the ministry, do it today. We need to hear from you. Also, when you do, we'll send a copy of the DVD Chosen to you. And Lacey's featured in that DVD, sharing her story. And it's an important DVD to show your age-appropriate children. I think, again, giving them knowledge, which empowers them to defend themselves in that situation if they ever encounter it. Knowledge is power.
Well, make that donation right now when you call 800-A-FAMILY, 800-232-6459. Or you can go online, it's very easy to do, at focusonthefamily.com/radio. And our program was provided by Focus on the Family. It was made possible by generous listeners like you. On behalf of Jim Daly and the entire team here, thanks for listening along. I'm John Fuller, hoping you have a great weekend and inviting you back on Monday. You'll hear why marriage matters as we offer more trusted insights to help your family thrive.
Hundreds of babies are abandoned on the streets of Seoul, South Korea every year. But one brave pastor has made it his mission to save them. See this powerful true story come to life when The Dropbox comes to movie theaters for 3 nights only, March 3rd, 4th, and 5th, with a special performance by Stephen Curtis Chapman. A portion of the producer's proceeds goes to support this pastor's life-saving ministry. Get your tickets now at thedropboxfilm.com.